Folks, drum roll please, as U.S. Open week is finally here. The 116th edition of our nation's championship coming at Oakmont Country Club, this venerable venue outside Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, hosting the U.S. Open for the ninth time in its storied history. Hello and welcome into the Digital Monday podcast. I'm George Savarikas with GolfChannel.com, associate editor Will Gray, Golf Channel analyst Trip Eisenhower, and guys, the second dance of the 2016 major season. What are you most looking forward to this week?
I'm looking forward to you pulling out venerable venue one more time.
That was good.
Yeah, that was excellent. Listen, everyone talks about this is the hardest course in the world. Mm-hmm. You hear it from top guys. You hear it from the members that seem to relish in giving it that title. I want to see it play out that way. I want to see these guys churn and burn for 72 holes.
You want to see punishment.
Yeah, it's going to be – I always look forward to the punishment of the U.S. Open, but I like that we're on the other spectrum of where we were last year at Chambers Bay, and even it's going to be very different from Pinehurst 2 years ago. This is a U.S. Open like your daddy used to know it, where you got the high rough, the slick greens. Even par is going to be a great score at the end of the week and probably will.
And this golf course will stand up to it. You want punishment, you're going to see it. But the thing about it is when you look at Oakmont, if you hit the shots where you need to hit them, you can play the golf course. If you stray just a hair, that's the thing about Oakmont. The line is so fine that Oakmont that once you go on the other side of it, it's very difficult to get back in position and recover. Not only with the difficulty of the grass and the rough, the difficulty in hitting the fairways, but the speed of the greens and the slope of the greens. And those are the things that the players are going to have to dance. But again, you hit the shots where you need to hit them, and you should know where to hit them. It's pretty obvious where you need to. You can be rewarded with some. You can make some birdies, and you can make some, solid pars, which you're going to need a lot of this week.
I'm curious with the tree removal that they've undergone the last 20 plus years, especially. I think they're about 7,000 removed this year. How much that's going to change sight lines and playability? You played in the 07 U.S. Open at Oakmont. What type of impact do you think that'll have?
Well, it is weird. What used to be between 1 and 9, there was the row of trees you never saw really 9 before. And when I played there in 07, you did. It was open then. So I don't think the changes, it was much more drastic from the last time that Ernie Els won it at Oakmont to 07 than it will be from 07 to 16. But definitely you stand on top of that hill on number one and you look down and you can see everything. I love it. It's a wonderful test. Let's hope the weather cooperates as well, because we don't need difficult weather this week. We're going to have a difficult enough test with the golf course.
And if you remember when Ernie won it back in 94, how scorching the temperatures were that week, which segues to the hottest player coming in this week. Who's your pick, the hottest player on any tour in the field coming into the U.S. Open?
I don't know if he's the hottest player, but I think he's the player that I like the most, and it would be Rory. I think that you still would have to give Jason Day is coming in pretty hot, even though he didn't play too well over the weekend at the Memorial. But I just like what Rory has to offer. I love how confident he seems to be, tee to green, the drivers cooperating, which you need at this sort of course. And he seems to, he wins in Ireland, putting left-hand low. He switches the putting grips. He goes top five at Muirfield Village. Those are two very difficult courses to putt well on. He did it with two different grips. I think that whichever putting style he wants to go with this week, he'll be okay.
It will be his performance on the greens. I mean, that's going to determine Rory. And if you look at the places that he's won, the majors that he's won, the greens were not typically a major speed. Yep. I think if there is a weakness with Rory, and I love everything about Rory McIlroy, he can win this golf tournament, no question about it. It is the putting of very fast greens, and these are some of the fastest you'll ever face. So that'll be the one thing. But I do like to switch back from left-hand low to conventional. And what he said was the left-hand low got his shoulders more square.
Right.
And so now that he's back conventional, he's going to keep the shoulders very square. And we'll see. Again, he can pick apart a golf course with his tee shots that's very few in the game can do. So, yeah, Rory McIlroy's a solid pick.
And that's a heck of a group that Rory McIlroy is a part of. Danny Willett, we haven't seen him in a couple weeks since the BMW PGA. He, of course, won the Masters. Ricky Fowler has kind of been sliding coming in of those three guys, because we haven't pinned you down. You haven't picked the hottest player.
Not yet.
Of the guys in that group, whose game do you like the most?
Rory's. I do.
Take Rory.
I would take Rory out of that group without question. Now, just because Danny Willett's on a little bit of a Masters hangover. I get it.
He had a 36-hole lead in his last two events. I would say.
I understand. World-class player.
He's taking a couple at
back-to-back majors. Okay? Very few players have ever done that.
Jordan Spieth did it a year ago.
Gary Willen is not Jordan Spieth.
He's halfway there?
He is halfway there. That is true.
Listen, they're gonna have a seat together in Augusta for a long time together at that Champions Dinner, but Danny Willett is not Jordan Spieth.
I get that.
And he has a great game. He drives the ball beautifully. He's got a fantastic short game. He's a solid putter. You look at his stats as far as that goes. I mean, I think Danny Willett, I'm not saying he's not going to be part of the story. I just don't think he's going to hold the trophy at the end of it. But of that group, I'm going with Rory McIlroy to play the best.
Who's your hottest player?
The hottest player is a guy, and this may surprise a lot of people, but I think he's got a quintessential U.S. Open-type game, and he's playing some great golf. He's done everything but hold a trophy recently, and that's Matt Kuchar. I mean, you look at how he's playing again. He's playing Matt Kuchar-style golf.
Which has gotten him no majors.
Right,
so
Matt Kuchar-style golf is a nice T12 and a great stake on Sunday night.
A lot of top 10s and a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
But
we're not asking you to pick who's going to finish in the tie for ninth.
I'm not. I'm picking Matt Kuchar to win this golf tournament.
Right.
I think if the time is right for him, I think if you look at the trajectory of his game recently, he tried to hit the ball higher, and with the one plane swing that he was doing, trying to hit the ball higher, he ended up hanging back on it and started losing the ball to the left. He's fixed that. He's back hitting the shots that he wants to hit. I spoke to him at Memorial. He was very pleased with where his game – or not Memorial, excuse me. I spoke to him earlier in the year at Charlotte. And
don't know to Gus. Which tournament was it?
But anyway, he was very happy with where his game was. So I do think that Matt Kuchar, if you look at the last couple of finishes he's had, he's had some top five finishes, been right there part of the story. I think it's finally there for this type golf course to fit him. The other guy I really like, too, but the questions of his health are more concerning, is Justin Rose. But this is going to be a guy who gets the ball in the fairway, a guy who drives it very straight, and a guy who has the ability to be very patient once you're tested, because you're going to be tested. Matt Kuchar's got patience in space.
We're making the distinction, though, just hottest player coming in. We're making our picks at the end of the Monday.
George, you're being outvoted right now. It's 2-1. You threw us a question. We're turning it around. I think Rory's going to win. You think Kuchar's going to win. We can talk heat check later.
Good way to keep people hooked for another 20 minutes. I'm saying the hottest player coming in
first
is Jason Day. I would say he is the hottest player with his body of work the last month. That is my guy for hottest player, number one in the world, for good reason.
Going out on a limb there.
No, but he's the hottest player.
Okay.
I'm not saying he's going to win.
All right.
Stick around another 20 minutes, then you'll see who I'm picking
Phil
to
Mickelson's
win.
Pretty hot, too.
That was the question. Hottest player. I would say you got to go with Jason Day with what he's been doing the last 2 months, since mid-March up until a couple weeks ago. He is the hottest player coming in. And the style of golf that he plays, if he is a hot putter, which he's basically been riding for, a year plus now?
Almost.
He doesn't drive it the straightest, which will clearly hinder him at a venue like Oakmont. But I think with his short game, he could easily be in the picture, and he would be the hottest player preceding the week in Pennsylvania.
No one is saying that Jason Day, world number one, is going to miss the cut.
I just said he's the hottest player.
Boom. You could say he's the hottest player.
Hot
but where he's going to struggle, George, where he's going to struggle is
that's
his,
a scorching hot take, because he's the hottest.
You mentioned his short game. His short game style will be hampered somewhat at Oakmont. Now, will he be able to overcome it? Long grass chipping is very difficult for someone as shallow as Jason Day is, and he has trouble with that. And we saw it at the Players' Championship on the ninth hole.
He ended up winning three in a row.
But that's Bermuda grass. This grass is a little bit more predictable, but it's still very high. So if he's going to be hampered at all, he's going to have to overcome that. It's not really a deficiency, because I love the way he chips and pitches the ball.
Yeah.
It's just a very rare occurrence that he's going to have to deal with this kind of high grass that you're going to face at Oakmont. So maybe the short game might not be as sharp. Who knows? But, Jason Day is hot. But so's Matt Kuchar. I mean, four straight top tens coming into this tournament.
I'm not belying the fact that Matt Kuchar's not playing well. And another guy we're not talking about at all so far, defending champion Jordan Spieth. And we had that great stretch where all three guys in the top three in the world had won their last start going into the Memorial, and Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, and Rory McIlroy. What do you make of where Jordan's game is at as he was able to prevail at the Dean and DeLuca Invitational?
Yeah, I mean, that was good. I mean, I was out there at Colonial all week, and he just seemed like a different guy, more relaxed guy than he was the week before at the Byron Nelson.
He was a little tight at the end of that event.
Yeah, and it really showed over the weekend that he was very much in control, and it was a big sigh of relief for him to get that victory. I think that helped shake a few of the skeletons off of him from the Masters. But I need to go back to Matt Kuchar. I am.
Oh, boy.
I've been waiting here. We got off a little sidetrack with your heat check thing. I am concerned. When was Matt Kuchar ever really in the mix coming down the back nine of a major?
Augusta National a couple of years
2014,
ago.
2014, but he four putted on the front nine. He was in there.
Well, he made an eagle, I believe, on 15 to have the lead with three holes left, and hit it to the right on 16.
On 16.
With an eight iron and kind of, and then he three putted. But look. I'm just saying, would anybody have picked Angel Cabrera in 07 to win this championship? It fits.
Or Danny Willett 2 months ago.
Yeah, I understand. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm just saying that for Matt, a player as established and as well-seasoned as Matt Kuchar is, with as many high finishes as he has and money in the bank, the number of opportunities that he's had coming down the back nine on Sunday to possibly win a major are relatively slim.
Yes. Okay. And so they were.
So
slim
we should just
Angel
pick chalk
Cabrera
the whole time.
Too. I mean, no. I mean, this. No. Is
no. I would rather. I would rather go out on the limb with a younger player, like a guy with Danny Willett, who has less experience, than a guy like Matt Kuchar or like even Henrik Stenson or something
on
like
a limb,
that.
Though with Danny Willett, like it's so easy to say, pick a younger guy. But what younger guy are you going to pick who's never been in the crossfire?
Tony
before?
Finau. Next. I'm just saying. Listen. I'm just saying that Matt Kuchar, it concerns me that he has had dozens of opportunities in the majors and he hasn't really played into contention. I would rather take someone who has less experience with as much talent than someone who has been there consistently and hasn't gotten
and
it done.
That would be your pick. Tripp's pick is Matt Kuchar. Exactly. Now let's get bogged down with Matt Kuchar's career resume. We can do it. We'll save that half hour Monday Scramble podcast.
After
for future Monday.
Yeah. After he wins.
After he wins. So let's shift the focus back. Now that we've talked about the top three, if you will, since you went right through Jordan Spieth, who wants to talk about the defending
just
champ?
Just so you know,
the guy only won the U.S. Open a year ago.
Jason Day's still hot. Last time I checked.
Right? No, what's your take on Jordan Spieth? We kind of glossed over the fact.
Listen,
you said it. He
yes,
was
he's,
able
he's
to
playing well.
Exercise some demons.
Yes, I think that there's a different level of demons as he gets to a major championship. He needs to win another major to kind of get the monkey off his back from Augusta. He does.
No,
I think. No,
does.
Listen. Listen. There are three.
The guy's 22.
No, listen. There are three levels of demons or whatever with.
Three
with
levels.
With Augusta. So the first one was getting a win. He did that at Colonial, and he was outspoken. He brought it up and said this was a big relief. We wanted to get it done. He wasn't asked. Someone asked him in the press room about what it was like to win in Dallas in the DFW era, and he pivoted it into how great it was to finally win after Augusta. So that's level one. Check that box off. Level two is winning another major title, and then level three is winning another Masters, because until he wins another Masters, every spring we're going to come around and we're going to replay that stuff from the 12th hole, and he's going to have to answer those same questions. So once he gets all three of those check marks off, then the slate is clean.
I don't think, though, I get what you're saying, and Jordan will probably say that after the fact if and when he wins another major. But if you look at Rory McIlroy, who had a huge meltdown on the final nine holes at Augusta and then won the U.S. Open
by 8 shots.
The very next time he teed it up.
Oh, yeah.
How often have we brought up what happened in 2011? It's not like every spring it's trotted out. Oh, man, the meltdown that Rory had in 2011. All that's mentioned is, hey, that's the one major
he
hasn't won yet.
No, but that's because there was – you had it on the 10th hole, but there was less of an iconic moment. That was a bit
that
of a slow –
snap hook. I mean, I get
– But it was more of a slow bleed than Jordan Spieth had one shot, one moment in time that cost him a green jacket. It's binary. If he hits the land – He wins the Masters.
No,
if he doesn't. Yeah.
He had to play it even going in just to get in the playoff.
Yeah.
You can't chuck it up
one.
That
no,
he's going to win.
One.
No, no, I'm saying on 12. If he makes double there, he has to play it even going in.
I'm saying on the first tee shot on 12. If he finds lane on the first tee shot.
I don't think it was
on the first one.
He was going to win.
Yeah. On the first one, if he makes par, he's at 5 under. Willett won with 5 under. He would have had to play it even going in just to get in the playoff. That's not a foregone conclusion like Tripp is saying that he wins it.
Bogey, bogey on 10 and 11.
He goes bogey, bogey, and then somehow makes par on 12. You don't think he's starting to think, oh, wow, Danny Willett's only one back?
No, I think he's got two of the
three. He's already spinning.
We're turning this into a Masters podcast now, George. This is a little, we're going off the rails. But, I think that he, 95% chance, how about that he wins a Masters if he makes par on 12?
Well, that's your opinion, and that's fine. I don't think that I would go as high as 95%. As far as Jordan Spieth goes, look, he does not need to win another Masters to get rid of what happened there.
They're going to ask him about it.
Of course they are. But look, you don't put your name next to Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus as many times as Jordan Spieth has done, and surpassed Tiger Woods in a lot of things.
True.
Does he have a Tiger Woods-type game that's awe-inspiring and you sit there and watch the shots he can hit? No. But he's got something special. It's a golfer's IQ level that very few players generationally have. He's got it. And that ability to bounce back shows what Jordan Spieth is. He struggled at Colonial. He did not have his best stuff at Colonial. He won the tournament. He didn't have his best stuff at Augusta, and he almost won that golf tournament. That's the kind of golfer Jordan Spieth is. He's going to need to have his best stuff at Oakmont.
I will say proximity to the hole could be an issue for Jordan. We were talking before this about you need to miss in the right places at Oakmont, and it's been his irons. It's been his approaches that have been a little squirrely this year. If he tightens that up, he could certainly.
Remember the storyline last year. Dustin Johnson had a putt to win on the 72nd hole, ends up three-jacking, had a great finish in Memphis. Clearly a different style of golf course than what he's going to experience this week. What do you take away, Tripp, from the 63 and kind of the play we've seen out of DJ the last couple months where he's had a lot of top 10s, top 20s, but hasn't gone on a prolonged stretch, if you will, of contention.
Well, TPC Southwind is a long way from Oakmont, not just in
more than
in
a couple hundred miles.
You're saying it's more of a long walk than a short flight for DJ?
It is. But, look, I admire DJ's one of the most talented players to ever play the game. I mean, naturally talented. He's got that Sam Snead ability to just walk onto the tee and just play beautiful golf. Now, he doesn't have the Sam Snead resume, and I don't think he ever will because he doesn't putt and chip the ball, and his wedges are not as solid as they need to be. But he is a guy with the best streak on tour right now. He's won each and every year he's been on tour. And it's
except this year. He's run out of time here.
So far, yes. I would be very surprised if DJ were Oakmont distance is extremely important, but, man, you've got to be in the fairway. And DJ does hit it very straight for a guy who hits it as far as he does, but I just don't think he's got the short game and the putting that you need to contend at Oakmont.
I would tend to agree with you. I am concerned at the level of hype that DJ is getting from various outlets entering this week. He's got six top 12 finishes in his last seven starts overall. He played so well at Chambers Bay last year. Everyone's sitting there saying, well, he's got the driver working. It's going to be a huge asset. Tee to green, he's so far ahead of the rest of the field. But there are two players who I don't think will win a major until they have both hands on the trophy, and that is Dustin Johnson and Sergio Garcia. Until it happens, I won't believe it. And both of them certainly have the ability to do it. Both of them have had plenty of chances and probably will have plenty more. But I'm not going to sit there and pick Dustin to go out and do it this week. The other issue is he's always having one weird round. Even in this great stretch, he had it last week in Memphis on Saturday. He puts up, I think, a 73 to kind of fall back, and then he vaults back into the mix with a 63 on Sunday. But you can't afford a bad round or an off day at the U.S. Open and still come out on top.
Who do you think is dealing with more either self-imposed pressure or scar tissue, Phil Mickelson or Dustin Johnson, considering to what happened to DJ a year ago and then all the hype that's followed Phil since winning the Open, his last victory, to try and complete the career Grand Slam?
I think it's Phil by a mile. I don't think that Dustin honestly really is thinking much about the scar tissue.
You think he's thinking about the three putting and then not going to the victory ceremony?
I tend not to think that Dustin Johnson is really standing over the first tee shot or whatever that he's thinking about Chambers Bay, whereas Phil, I think it's
at
front of mind.
Jordan was thinking about the Masters as he wins a Colonial. So where's the discrepancy there?
That's Jordan Spieth and this is Dustin Johnson. I just think that Dustin Johnson is going to go out and play his game from tee to green and add it up at the end. On Sunday, there are certainly...
You think if he's in contention on Sunday, he doesn't
then,
start?
Then it could. My issue with Phil is he's thinking about it now. He said after finishing second at Memphis, he said, well, the U.S. Open came early. I finished second again. He said that... it's so clearly on top of mind. Five runner-ups. This is the one that he hasn't been able to get over the hump. He's thinking about it the week before.
Well, he's thinking about it every January.
Yeah.
And he's running out of time.
Yeah.
And if you look at the venues that he's got, Shinnecock's coming up. I think that could be a
Wingfoot at 50, I think.
Yeah, and this one for Phil, oh, man. I know that I shot the same score as Phil here in 07. We both missed the cut by a shot. So this is not a Phil Mickelson-type golf course. And he's playing some fantastic golf. The short game, certainly Phil has that. He's putting beautifully.
Wingfoot wasn't either.
Well, that's true, but I think this is a different Phil Mickelson.
He was going for three majors in a row there. Exactly. I mean, he's on a different
plane. Yeah. And he wasn't going for the career Grand Slam at that time. I mean, look, I would personally love to see it for the story. And I would love to see Phil Mickelson with a chance to win this golf tournament. I think it would be fantastic for the ratings. It would be fantastic for the game of golf.
Such a company man trip.
No, but, I mean, for the game of golf, it would be good to see Phil Mickelson in contention. And could he win it? Would anybody sit here and go, Phil Mickelson can't win this U.S. Open?
No, no.
Absolutely. So there is a chance. Is it likely? Probably not. I mean, if you're betting in the odds, I would certainly say that Phil's probably not going to do it.
Monopoly money. All right, so winners, you guys already made your picks, so I'll do the drum roll for my own picks since we have Matt Kuchar and Rory McIlroy. I'm going Brandon Grace.
Okay.
Who was in the mix a year ago. Won
train ball.
RBC Heritage.
We're for the train ball at Chambers Bay.
And then that segues to the next question, a guy under the radar. You had kind of mentioned Tony Finau. I'll let you pick another name if you want to make a switch. I was going to go with Russell Knox. Okay. I think T.D. Green, the guy can flat out stiff it. You need good ball striking. His putter can be a bit sketchy, but that's a guy who could be kind of under the radar who's on the first page of the leaderboard on the weekend.
I don't think we're talking enough about Brooks Koepka. Okay. Two straight runner-ups, played really well on
respect that.
You know, I agree with what you were saying before. The TPC Southwind and Four Seasons at the same time are not exactly Oakmont. Yeah. But, you know, you're going to have to get the ball out there. You're going to have to find the fairway. And you're going to have to be solid around the greens. I think
this is one that probably not a lot of people are thinking of. And it's one guy that I think can ball strike his way into contention here. And it shouldn't surprise a lot of people. But anytime it's a ball striking contest, Hideki Matsuyama ought to be on your short list. I mean, the guy is one of the best ball strikers there is. The other one, you know, another guy that I think will be part of the story with his ball striking, and he's not under the radar, is Adam Scott. But Hideki Matsuyama would be a guy that not a lot of people would think of as somebody. Now, can he win this golf tournament? Is he a good enough putter? I don't know. But he's good enough to put himself there with just his tee to green game.
He's certainly playing better this year than he has before. And you think, certainly I don't think of him as a great putter. The putter is the weakness for him. But then you think back 2 years ago, he won at Muirfield Village. And that's a place with some pretty slick greens. It's not quite Oakmont fast, but those are those are pretty quick.
Before we get to the major that was just in the books on the LPGA Tour, I'm going to hit you with three quick ones, just yes or no, so we don't belabor the point. Within three of the lead on Sunday, Ricky Fowler.
No.
Nope. Okay. Not within three of the cut line.
Patrick Reed.
Yes.
Yes.
Henrik Stenson.
No.
No.
Okay. I'm going yes, yes, no.
You think Ricky Fowler's coming around? I am so concerned about Ricky.
I didn't say belabor the point. Let's go now to what we saw in the KPMG Women's PGA. That was the Jaws theme music from the Oscars. You got to take a hike.
Right, listen, I'm just saying. I'm concerned.
How about two teenagers dueling down the stretch and Brooke Henderson, big putt after big putt. It seemed like she was lurking around, but up until the one she rolled in on 17, I wasn't really buying it. I thought Lydia Ko was still going to win. Then she gets a little sketchy on 18. First playoff hole, guys. How impressed were you by the medals she showed down the stretch?
Extremely. Look, we're used to watching Lydia Ko make those kind of putts and Lydia Ko holding the trophies, and now Lydia Ko has met her match. I think Brooke Henderson, when you look at all the different things that she's got, now she's got a major championship. She's got the tons of talent. We've seen it. She drives the ball better than Lydia. She drives the ball further than Lydia. If she's got that kind of short game. Now, Lydia's overall wedge game, I would still give a huge advantage to Lydia there. But if Brooke gets her wedge game a little bit better, the pressure putting we saw, Brooke Henderson can be a formidable thorn in Lydia Ko's side for a number of years.
Yeah, I totally agree. The world rankings now are 1-2 with Lydia and Brooke. First of all, this was an absolute paradigm shift for me. A playoff between two women who were born after Tiger Woods won the 97 Masters.
That's amazing.
That's a little scary at the same time. But, yeah, I mean, she played so well. Listen, Lydia Ko went out as the world number one, shot a bogey-free 67, and got beat. I mean, that's just it's not like she fell apart or even really gave her a big opening. Brooke Henderson went out and just hit the shots, making putts off the green. It was a great theater, great tournament. You know, it was kind of the polar opposite for Pacific Northwest Golf from what we saw at Chambers Bay last year, but it was a great event.
Hey, that was great theater as well. I'd say both of those events, if they shared anything, it was great theater down the stretch. What most impressed me with Brooke Henderson, I talked with the Ping guys. Of course, she gets a lot of hype with the 48-inch driver. They said she is the longest driver of any player, male or female, that they fit on a professional tour, yet it was the putter down the stretch that couldn't miss. Do you think this is now going to be a budding rivalry going forward, that this could kind of be the 1-2 punch that propels the women's game for the next 3, 5, however many years down the road?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I mean, I think that there are going to be some other players that are going to factor them in. If Imbi Park gets healthy, she could certainly be back in the mix. But, you know, they're 18 and 19 years old. Brooke Henderson, you know, it was a surprising victory, but not entirely surprising, given that she's been a top 10 machine all year long. She won on the LPGA last year. And, yeah, I think that the sky's the limit for both these players.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And the one player that you would love to throw in there, but she's a total mess, is Michelle Wee. She has the talent to be standing there toe-to-toe with these players, but she just gets in her own way time and time again. If we were going to make
Lexi?
It like a big
I think
three.
Lexi. Yeah, Lexi.
That's,
that's
the
big
one.
Three.
But she's still got to putt the ball. And Lexi with the putter can be a bit iffy.
It scares you that she went through a period where she was putting with her eyes closed.
Yeah, but you, as a player, you're trying to find anything that works and anything that gives you that ray of confidence.
But I'm saying, if you're getting to that point, where you're going to putt with your eyes closed.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
Not ideal.
Not ideal.
Might as well talk to Snake Charmer or see what magical elixir can help you.
Coe and Henderson, there's no question. Those two, Brooke and Lydia, are going to be around for a long, long time. I would love to see somebody like Lexi come up and challenge him, because she's got the talent to do it. She's the best striker of the golf ball in the ladies' game. She hits it further than anybody.
Brooke's not too far behind.
That's what I mean. And Brooke can move it out there. Yeah, she's got the power, and she's obviously got that scoring ability and ability to handle pressure. So, yeah, the state of the women's game right now is in a very good hands.
And not to skip to the third major of the year, but I know all of us here at Golf Channel are quite excited for the first ever major to air on our air, as well as NBC, the Open. Of course, more guys able to punch their ticket to the Open as we take a peek at the four men who were able to, thanks to their play at the FedEx St. Jude Classic, punch their ticket to the Open. That's Steve Stricker, Brian Gay, Sungjae Noh, and Russell Henley. Who's the biggest surprise of the four, Tripp?
Oh, Brian Gay, without question. I mean, he's been hurt. He's not been playing very well by his standards. I mean, Brian's an extremely short hitter, but a very accurate hitter and a fantastic putter, and all that came together this last week. And I've actually played with Brian at TPC Southwind, and I remember how well he putted those greens. It was just amazing to watch him pour in putt after putt. He was doing it this week. So Brian Gay's getting back to that type of game that, hey, he's going to pop up on the right golf courses. And, you know, it's good to see that he got a trip across the pond.
What do you think of Steve Stricker? Possibly. I have a spot.
Possibly, right? The guy qualified here, we're still not sure. I mean, he skipped the Open Championship when he was in his prime because of personal reasons. He wanted to stay home with his kids. It's his wife, Nikki, and their anniversary. He said on Sunday, he's like, oh, I'm not sure. Personally, I think that at age 49, I don't know how many more cracks at the apple he's going to get to go over there, but it's clearly not high on his priority list if he qualifies and gives it a hearty maybe. I don't know. I mean, it does a little bit, but it's his decision. It's his career.
Well, normally
he's
celebrating a John Deere win. So this year's
got to go later
because John Deere's going later.
But he still said it's their anniversary. We're not sure. If you give me a ticket to Scotland, I'm certainly going to go book a flight pretty quick.
A little different point in your career than
Steve
Stricker.
You never know.
For me,
my short game's coming around.
I respect that he sticks to his guns. Athletes get so much grief for putting their profession ahead of their family. To see a guy who, even in his prime and now, says family comes first, it's totally his discretion. If he wants to play, I know golf fans would love to see him play in the Open and possibly contend at Troon. It would be a great story if he's even in the mix whatsoever, but it's his prerogative. If he says, you know what, I'd rather spend the week at home in Wisconsin with my family enjoying a great summer in the Cheese State.
I totally agree. I just think, listen, he's 49. He's going to make the PGA Tour Champions a priority once he turns 50. Yeah. He's hosting an event on that circuit even before he turns 50. I just don't know how many more chances, if any, he's going to get to play in this championship. It's still a major. It's still the oldest golf tournament in the world. I would go, but I'm not Steve Stricker.
Look, his decisions, I'm fine with it either way. I don't have an issue with it either way. I can understand him not going. Yeah. I can understand him saying, hey, this is my, you know, one of my few chances
my
I've got left.
Swan song.
But look, he's earned it. He's earned the right to do it because he's had a great career. He's been a fantastic ambassador for the game. One of the nicest guys you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
Steve Stricker, I'll back any decision he makes.
All right. From one end of the spectrum to the other, some of the AMs who are going to be in the mix who have already played their way into the U.S. Open, Derek Bard, Sam Burns, Charlie Danielson, Nick Hardy, Sam Horsfield, John Rahm, and Scottie Scheffler. And as we take a look, John Rahm, a two-time Ben Hogan Award winner. Yeah. Which name of that list? There's a lot of hype last year, of course, with some of the guys who were able to play their way into the mix, and then Bryson DeChambeau at the Masters. Who of those names sticks out to you?
Sam Horsfield. Give me all the Sam Horsfield stock I can. George, as you know, I went to Florida, so I'm a little biased in this.
Really? I didn't see that at all, did I?
He has been playing. I paid more attention to him than probably I should, but he's been playing some really, really good golf this spring. He's returning to the U.S. Open. He made the tournament last year, so he has a little bit of major championship experience. He's certainly a protege of Ian Poulter. And has a great pedigree here in the state of Florida, so I think that he's going to play really well up at Oakmont.
Sam Horsfield, obviously, yes, buy all the stock you can, but another guy that you want to buy stock in, John Rahm.
Yeah.
Look, his game, he's going to be on the PGA Tour very soon.
In a week.
And he's got the chops, he's got the game. I look at, you know, his resume, everything about it says he's going to be a star on the PGA Tour, because very rarely do you look at people with that kind of pedigree and that kind of resume, do they not have success on the PGA Tour, and he will.
All signs to both those guys point to having successful professional careers. Just to change it up, I'll go Charlie Danielson, the Illini standout.
Another home pick. I'll take Nick Hardy over Charlie Danielson.
I'd say that's a good debate. Could go either way. Charlie Danielson definitely has.
Our Tuesday podcast breaking down the Illinois golf team. We'll see how that goes.
All right, winning score. It was +5. Tripp was just a couple off of it back in 2007. Is it going to be higher or lower than +5?
Higher.
What's the winning score going to be?
7 over.
Seven over. So that would be
that is frightening.
The highest since what? 74?
Wingfoot at 74. Yeah, that Hale Irwin won, right?
Yeah. I'll go lower, maybe. I mean, like three over sounds like a great score to me at the end of the week. It's going to depend on the weather a little bit. It looks like they might get some rain Thursday and Friday, which could soften things up. But, man, if they get that place baked out for the weekend, look out. Definitely could see 5, 6, even 7 over par.
I'd say, I don't know, total shot in the dark. I'll say it's going to be around 5 over again, 4 or 5
The cut
over
was 151 in 07. So that's, cuts at 151 on tour, they don't happen very often.
All right, big three or the field. Let's crank out some quick final predictions before we wrap this up.
Field.
This is totally way too unpredictable.
So you go Rory McIlroy to win it.
Yep.
But if you give me one hand in one pocket, one hand in the
absolutely.
Other.
Absolutely. Listen, I'm a numbers
guy. You can eat it too.
If you're giving me 153 guys against the other three, yeah, I'll take it.
I'm taking the big three.
Okay.
There you go.
You're a man of principle.
Okay.
Well, not at all. I picked Brandon Grace, but I'm glad you think that way. All right.
I'm consistent. I said field, and I picked Matt Kuchar.
There you go.
So there.
Final prediction, what is this U.S. Open most going to be remembered for?
This one's going to be remembered for going back to what we traditionally see U.S. Opens like. I mean, the last couple of years, we've strayed from it. And really, since Mike Davis has started setting up golf courses, we've seen changes. It started really at Torrey Pines. Different changes, drivable par fours late in tournaments or late in the round. I like the way he does it. I like the graduated rough somewhat. But you know what? This is Oakmont. It's classic golf course. We're going to see a classic U.S. Open. You stray, you pay. That's what's going to happen this week at Oakmont.
Yeah, I think that if you look back at 07, the course was really the star. I mean, you had Tiger and Furyk and Cabrera there at the end, but I think it's going to be another case of that where you're going to have plenty of storylines that come out coming down the stretch, but at the end of the day, this is about the course. Everyone says it's the hardest course in the U.S. Open rotation, and there's a reason for
it. Oakmont will win.
Yes.
And this on a high note, to quote 20th century philosopher Mr. T from Rocky III, what's your prediction? Pain.
See carnage. Do the carnage.
Mr. T a lot.
Yeah. Clubber leg. How can you can't go wrong?
So good.
Will Gray, I'm George Savarikas and Tripp Eisenhower. Thanks so much for joining us right here on the Monday Scramble Podcast.